Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
We're going to bring y'all into our huddle.
You are at the Warriors Huddle with me, Bram. No, Marcus, today. In fact, we weren't even supposed to record. We were supposed to wait till Wednesday, but I was just too fired up, man. We have to talk about Game 6 at least a little bit. So it's going to be just two of us to start, but joining me per usual, we do have our master of all things sound, Maxine.
How's it going?
It is going remarkably well. I was hella fired up that you did use the normal open because I wanted to get all excited. And I should say we are inviting Mark Medina into the pod. He's going to be our main guest today. But Mark is always professional and kind of objective. We don't have time for professionalism, dude. We've got one of the best wins of all time to discuss. So I figured you and I would shoot the shit a little bit and then we'll welcome Mark in. And let me start it this way, man. That Game 6 win, I'm gonna just use hyperbole. I think it was the most satisfying win during the dynastic era, if not the best win. Do you agree with that?
Yeah, I wouldn't even call that hyperbolic. I think you're right on the money. You posted that in the Slack channel. I can't think of another one that was more satisfying. And it was pretty clear that the Warriors felt the same way.
I am thrown back by your immediate second use of the word hyperbole. I didn't even know that there was another version of it. Like, I was going to make fun of you, and then I realized, no, oh my God, he's just smarter than me, and he knows how to use this word better. So I want you to cut hyperbolic. What did you say? Whatever it was, I want you to cut that because it's making me feel a little bit... Stupid.
You
okay,
got it,
I appreciate
man.
That.
No worries.
I think it is absolutely the best win. And anyway, let's put it this way. There have been all of these nagging concerns, these rocks that Warriors haters have thrown towards the Warriors dynasty. And we duck them and we pretend like we don't care, but we kind of do. And this win basically addressed every single one of them, right? There's a suggestion that the Warriors only won because of other teams' injuries. Well, bullshit. They said that Steph Curry never came through in the big moments. Let's go ahead again and say bullshit. They've said that the Warriors' success came because they had their own run of injury luck. Again, bullshit. They said that Klay doesn't come through during the playoffs. Double bullshit. They even said that a team featuring at least three other future Hall of Famers could not win without Kevin Durant. And again, bullshit. And let's add that in addition to addressing all of these ridiculous, unfounded shots that they've taken at the Warriors, that one win also single-handedly destroyed their biggest rival. It took this team who has been telling everybody, we have one goal, we've built this team with one purpose, to beat the Warriors, and then they had to watch the Warriors, without the best player on earth, celebrate on their home court. I can't remember another win that checked off that many pieces. You know what I mean? Like, there's the OKC Game 6. That's what everyone throws back in my right. face. But I think this one just had more pieces to it.
Yeah, there's a couple of things that for me make me agree, right? That we're the prohibitive favorites going into the series, starting in October the whole time, and then we lose KD, and then now we're the underdogs
right.
to this game.
Right.
And, like, remembering what that felt like to just be the underdog a little bit just made the win so much sweeter. And then the other thing that I think is really important is there was the narrative last year of, oh, okay, well, if Chris Paul hadn't gotten hurt, right, maybe Houston would have pulled this out. And I think it just says so much that, you know, first of all, also that Iguodala was such a key component of this series.
Yes.
And so it's like, yeah, him being out for two games at the end really did matter, everybody.
It turns out Kerr was on the money. Exactly
right. Like, oh, surprise, a brilliant coach was smarter than the rest of you idiots. And then on top of it, quite obviously, we had our best player go down, and they're a perfectly healthy team and still couldn't hang.
It was a play that, or a game, that it was almost like having a conversation with someone you hate and winning every single angle of it. You know, I mean, it really was. Them saying Andre's not important. Sit back and watch this. Them talking about the importance of Chris Paul and having him be there and watching it fall apart. There was just an element to this that I don't think we're ever going to be able to see. In fact, let me put it this way. If you broke this down as a movie script, before it happened, if I sat down and I wrote it, at some point you're going to be like, wait a minute, man. Like, this is, it's getting a little bit ridiculous, right? So you take this unbelievable favored team and you rip out their supposed best player. Now it's left to the homegrown all-stars who, by the way, also have all these nagging concerns, these whispers, you know, is Draymond's health maybe not there? You know, Andre's getting up in age. Steph doesn't always show up. And then they not only deliver, but before they get a chance to deliver, Steph, the hero of the story, goes over, has 0 points in the half, and then comes screaming back in historic fashion to shut up, 20,000 people in a hostile arena. Like, there's no movie could fit in that amount of things and you'd still feel like it was a documentary. You know what I mean? Like, it's impossible. And it wasn't even a documentary. This is just what happened. It's just how it played out. Unbelievably satisfying.
Oh, so to the point that you might even consider this a Disney movie, am I right?
Yeah, there you go. I feel like you're taking a shot at my amazing analogy last week. It does feel exactly like that.
Take.
It's
about.
Not original. It's also a little bit rude, and I don't mind telling you, go f*** yourself. Let me distill it. I have a bunch of moments I've pulled out, so what I want to do is figure out the most satisfying moment or thing that came out of the series or the Game 6. I've got some candidates, all right, but feel free. We can reach outside of those candidates if we want. Here's what I got, and let's just say right up front, we're going to take Curry's redemptive second half off the table. It's too easy. I mean, 24 in the fourth quarter, that probably is the most satisfying. So here are my options. One, Thompson's huge first half, 21 points in the first half, basically the reason they were tied despite being down three All-Stars if you count Steph's disappearance. The look Paul and Harden had as time lacked out, and like it was like an amazing combination between confusion, pain, and just the amazing knowledge of knowing you just didn't have it. You just weren't enough, which I really enjoyed. Here's kind of a random one. When my boy Soft JJ, Jonas Arebko, came in, fouled the shit out of Austin Rivers, and then when Austin gave him a look like that's illegal, he mouthed, "Yeah, that was a foul." You know, it was just like, yeah, call it, dude. Yep, I punched you right in your face. Go ahead and call that. Strangely satisfying. Iguodala taking Houston's entire defensive premise, the idea of, well, let somebody else beat them, and then shoving it right up their ass, going for 5 three-pointers, even though that's what they wanted. And then I'll finally say Draymond Green, just throughout the series. Because not only did we see the return of Draymond the playmaker, there was a couple of moments in that Game 6 where he could have lost his cool. Some bad fouls here or there, some altercations he had with the refs, and he didn't lose his cool, man. He kept his together. So those are my options. I'm going to go for Jonas Jerebko going after Nepo. As you may remember, that's my nickname for Austin Rivers. But who do you got? What was your most satisfying moment?
That does not surprise me at all, Graham.
Would you like me to liken it to a Disney movie? Or I'll just hold that in pocket.
Okay. A couple of other ones to throw out. I loved just the bench production in general, and I know you kind of touched on it with Jonas coming in, but like what we got out of everybody that came off the bench was just flooring, and especially because...
Did everybody foul Nepo, or just that was just Jerome?
Oh,
you mean
everybody
beyond that. Oh, okay.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. No, yeah. It's a good clarifying question. I appreciate you making sure that we get to the bottom of it. Yeah, no, I appreciate it. Yeah, look, I think that's a really, really important story that kind of feeds into this to the narrative that you were bringing up. Of everything that they were throwing our way, we had an answer for in Game 6. And this is another one. They said that our bench was astoundingly thin, not when we need it to be. Thank you very much.
That's exactly right. Well, and there's been shots taken at Kerr throughout the year. The rotations he was playing, the people he had out there, why Steph's minutes why weren't they where they should have been? And what we saw was that Kerr had a plan. Kerr was playing people during the regular season to make sure that they were ready for that moment on Friday night. May have cost them some wins during the regular season. It may have cost them some fans in Dub Nation. But ultimately, it was the right call because these dudes had minutes. They had played. They had something to lean on when they came out and played the giant role that you're currently talking about. But give me your favorite. What sticks out? Is it the bench? Is it Harden ultimately losing? What's the most satisfying thing for you?
The thing that sticks out is Klay Thompson with the finger guns.
Why?
It is just such a perfect encapsulation of everything that brings me joy about this team. Klay is consistently level-headed. You know, he can fire off huge games and big moments, but it's never going to be something that that sparks like a huge reaction, right? I mean, I feel like even, you know, it's not until after in the locker room, right, when they're celebrating and popping champagne that you see him go crazy. Yeah. But on the court, I mean, he just feels the momentous importance of that shot. And he turns around and just like, the finger gun, it's just such a perfect reaction to everything that has happened.
I've had sports goals over my life. I'd like to have made a game-winning free throw. Never happened for me. I wanted to go and watch a game at Madison Square Garden again. Never happened for me. Most importantly, I wanted to use finger guns live at some point, hopefully a sporting event. So far, still hasn't happened. Maybe during this podcast. I mean, we're not playing a sport, but maybe I'll be able to achieve my finger gun goal here. I don't know. We'll find out together. So far, I'm not feeling that finger gunny, but we could get there.
Yeah, it's only going to go up from here. I feel it.
I don't know if you listened to any of the press conference after the game. I, in fact, have listened to it 3 times, which, and as long as I'm making stupid weirdo admissions, I've also watched the game 2.5 times. Watched it the first time, watched it a second time in its entirety, but I was hammered drunk at a bar, so I'm going to just call that as a half. And then I watched it a third time over the weekend, and I started watching it as kind of like a joke and was rooting also kind of like a joke, like as if it was just happening for the first time. I would cheer occasionally. I mean, literally like stand up and cheer. By the fourth quarter, I was all the way in. It was as if I had never seen it before and I celebrated like they won the championship. And neither of those things were true. And I still had the time of my life. Also, I'm a grown ass man, Maxime. So you may want to factor that in, but I'm burying the lead. One of the upsides of having listened to every syllable of the press conference 3 times is that I was able to pull out some quotes. So the second portion of this, what an amazing win, early part of this podcast, I want to pick out the most satisfying quote from the press conference. All right. I've got sound on 2 of them, so let me read you the 3rd one I wasn't able to find any sound on. This is Joe Lacob on the Splash Brothers. Quote, so much fun. You kind of expect it. That's who they are. They've done it now so many times. Mark Jackson, of all people, he called them the greatest backcourt of all time, or greatest shooting backcourt of all time, and they've lived up to that. And they're clutch. They're amazing individuals. They're both great guys. They're just terrific people. I love that for a lot of reasons. All the superlatives are also right on the money, but I also like that he found a way to throw in a barb against Mark Jackson. That after so he gives him a quote, he stops and goes, of all people, like we're all thinking the same thing. Like, did you really have to quote Mark Jackson? Turns out that Joe Lacob has the same hate in his heart for our former coach. But let's give you a couple other options here. Here is Mike D'Antoni after the game.
First of all, they're champions, and they come in here down a man, but the way they shot the ball and the way they played are smart, and that's why they won rings, and we got to get there somehow.
Mike, how tough is this for you guys, James, Chris, everybody, knowing how hard you fought the last few seasons and how difficult this team has been to beat?
Well, this one's going to leave a mark. This is not something you just get over with. You know, I'm definitely not going to get over it in this press conference or tomorrow or the next day, but this one hurts. We didn't play our best, and to beat these guys, you got to play your best.
There's a few things about that one that I love. So, I mean, obviously, hearing an opponent like sound suicidal like that, there's a real upside. But the thing that I drew from it, the satisfaction that I enjoyed, is he's the coach, man. So, theoretically, one of his roles now is to get back into that locker room, remind them that they were right there, that they were in every one of these games, right? That they could have won one of the ones in Oakland, that they're not too far away, that this team is returning, that we have all this motivation, we've got this whole offseason, we can still do it. And instead what he's doing is going in front of the world, admitting how badly this hurts and using a vocal inflection that suggests he knows they are f***ed.
I find it remarkable that there isn't any chatter around the stability of his coaching job.
Oh, wow. What do you mean stability of his? You mean he should, there should be questions about whether or not he stays there? Correct. Or why?
Yeah. Just that seems to be the tendency in this league. For example, Brett Brown with Philly, right? Yeah. I mean, you look at immediately as soon as they lose that game by 2 points off of a ridiculous bounce off that ridiculous Kawhi shot. I mean, you know, they go into overtime. It seemed like Philly had some momentum. Okay, whatever. This is a Warriors pod. I just feel like immediately there were calls for Brett Brown's job. Why? It's like, why? It's his first year. Like, chill out on the guy, you know? Whereas D'Antoni has had time to perfect this scenario. Not just in Houston, but also in Phoenix. And so he comes over and like, look, yeah, fine. You don't immediately figure it out. Chris Paul gets hurt, whatever. But now they had a full team and they couldn't even pull it off. Yeah. And it didn't even go to 7 games. And we didn't even have Kevin Durant. It just doesn't seem like he is capable of doing the Daryl Morey high statistics analysis approach and actually succeeding. And so I'm wondering, maybe he's not the right man for this job.
One of the things I love about this, and I'm going to address what you just said, but I think Houston is locked into their exact roster and this exact team with this exact coach going into the future. But let's start by addressing what you've said. Really, what Mike D'Antoni has done is built a car that only he can drive. There's a giant upside in creating your own system and then having a GM who trusts that system so much he populates it. They can fire him now, but whoever the hell comes in is running the exact same system because this personnel dictates exactly that. And with the Chris Paul contract being so shit-burgery, they can't readjust. This team is what it is, you know, and so they now are looking at the prospect of going right back out and running right back into the Warriors buzzsaw without a whole lot of giant changes. But I do have a third quote for you. This one comes from Chris Paul, who sounds like somebody just repeatedly punched him in the dick.
Hey, Chris, how can you put this into words? I mean, you've been around and you guys have fought hard. What do you say after a game?
They just outplayed us. You know, they was played smarter than us. They made the big plays when we didn't. Too many turnovers, and they just beat us.
Chris, what'd you think of? Sorry, over here. What'd you think of the way that you guys defended Curry? There were times when he was real quiet. Gets kind of hot at the end. What do you think of the way you guys?
They just started at the end running ball screen with him and Draymond, and Draymond was slipping it. We let Steph get a couple butt naked layups. Clay moving, hitting big shots, and it's funny because everybody, you know, even Shump talk about it all the time. You say, make the other guys beat you. And, you know, Iguodala, how many threes he hit? Five out of eight. You know, you say, make the other guys beat you, and they damn sure did that.
Oh, Chris. Let's see. What do I like about that? I love the phrase butt naked layup.
Oh, me too.
Never heard that before.
Yeah,
I mean, real solid one. I plan, in addition to dropping finger guns at some point, also using the phrase butt naked layup. I love the huge pause between the first and second question because it's obvious this room full of reporters can recognize by his vocal inflection that he is so depressed this is going to be tough, and nobody wants to ask the second question at all. And I also like how he throws out how many threes did Iguodala hit, and you think it's probably just a exasperated throwaway comment. But no, they looked it up. Somebody was leaned over to him and said, oh, it's five, Chris. And he had to go back into the mic and say, five. Yeah, they sure as hell did that.
That's just so brutal. And I mean, five threes is an astounding number for Andre Iguodala.
Did you, at any point, did you start thinking they were going in, or were you, did you question every one of the shots he threw up?
I hate to say it, but I questioned every single one. I was like, no, he is not taking another. Yeah, okay, maybe on like make five, I started being like, well, at this point, it's all golden.
I am such a schizophrenic bastard. It's like on this podcast, it is all optimism and light, and I mean it, and I feel it. During the games, if something poorly happens, like if the Warriors don't look like they're firing all citizens on all cylinders, I don't take it well, man. I scream things that people can never take back. There is a whole lot of no, 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 yes moments with Andre and a whole lot of other players on on game six. So it's good maybe that we're not doing a whole lot of live podcasts during the games. So where do we land? Most satisfying quote for you?
I mean, there's a short-term and a long-term answer. The short-term is D'Antoni because he is the sort of press figurehead of that organization. I mean, Daryl Morey is the statistician behind the scenes, but D'Antoni is the one on the front lines, and he is just so clearly defeated, just done. Yep. And that felt so good to watch. I mean, I watched the whole press conference after the game because I was just, you know, that was my way of celebrating this. So that's the short term. But the more I think about it, the Lacob quote is so important because we were starting to hear rumors about, you know, Clay maybe looking elsewhere if he doesn't get the max offer. And what is implied by that is maybe there's something coming from the front office that they might not offer him the max immediately. And he deserves to go out and look at his options. And Lacob is so 100% in on Clay Thompson right now. And that makes me so freaking happy. Clay Thompson was doing the finger guns at Joe Lacob, and Joe Lacob gave him the finger guns right back.
And they have had a bunch of like mutual admiration society quotes since that happened. For me, it's Chris Paul. I mean, I've been really, really digging into how much I hate his hateable face throughout this series. And to finally hear him be so exasperated by a loss that he has trouble getting through something he has done for, what, the better part of 15 years in press conferences is fantastic. And the other thing that's really cool about this win, it's not a new take, but it's a reminder. Sports are such a unifying force. You know, so I'm walking around now since Friday night, and I'm normally speaking wearing some kind of Warriors gear. In this instance, I was wearing a hat for Saturday and Sunday. And every time I saw somebody wearing Warriors gear, we didn't talk. It's not like we created a friendship, but we shared at least a look. In some instances, a nod, a wry smile, something. But in that moment, me and that complete stranger shared something. We absolutely did. And then, we know, we'd part out, but I probably had 100 of those interactions throughout the course of this weekend. And I, in some ways, it's a weird way to say it on a podcast we're doing, but in some ways I'm an introvert. I don't like new people. I try to kind of to stay within the friend group I have created, and to be able to even slightly expand my horizons and welcome in all these other people without saying a word to them is really cool and super unique, man, because I know I've said this before, but this is a television show. You know, I don't find other people who watch Game of Thrones and wryly smile at them because we've shared something. That doesn't happen. But with this team, with this sport, with that game, we do. We reached a something that is special, and it should be said.
100%. And I think actually the Game of Thrones example is a good one because I did not enjoy the last episode.
I haven't seen it, so you
and
shut
I'm
up.
I'm not trying to give you any spoilers out, but I'm just saying that, like, you know, all things considered, I don't want to go out and find people to talk about that with, right? I'm kind of just want to brood on it, whatever. It's the exact opposite with the Warriors. That made me feel so good, and I know how I felt, and I know that is shared by every other Warriors fan out there. And so every time I see somebody, I know that we're sharing a similar feeling of just joy, and I want to share that with them.
So when you came in wearing a Game of Thrones shirt giving me finger guns, that wasn't you trying to talk about Game of Thrones. That was something totally different.
Oh, I got the look. You're like, fuck.
That's okay. You picked
it
up.
You were
able to pick that. Okay, that's. I am really happy to hear that. Let's turn to our boy Mark Medina. A quick thing between you and I. A while back, and I can't remember when the hell it was, but Mark told us a story about how Steph had suffered another hand injury. This was obviously before this one, and Mark went up to him to say what's up, shook his hand, and almost aggravated it. So I plan on bringing that up real early in this one. We'll see. I'm hoping I'm remembering it right because it might not have been the hand. So we'll find out. We'll find out in about 20 seconds here.
I'm pretty sure it's the hand. I remember that too.
There you go. We can both be wrong together. Let's give Mark a call. It is my great pleasure to re-welcome back into the huddle the current Bay Area News Group's Golden State expert and a guy who enjoys unique insider's access to this Warriors dynasty on a daily basis, Mr. Mark Medina. What's going on, Mark?
Bram, it's always good to talk with you. I mean, for somehow, some way, I've been your good graces and that dumb.
well, we'll see how the first 5 minutes go, man. We've got a few other guests.
By the way, like, should I just like stop with this joke, or do you enjoy me perpetuating it?
I love all perpetuated humor, Mark. I think you should keep bringing it. And in the vein of perpetuated humor, and also a serious question: have you had an opportunity to aggravate Steph's hand injury yet, or are you waiting for later in the week? See what I did there? Do you see what I did there?
Well, wait, do you think I'm the one responsible for his dislocated finger and not the fact that he blocked one of Clint Capella's shots?
You know, I didn't want to say it, and let the record reflect that I didn't say it, but now that you've put it on the table, I mean, I haven't been able to slow down the replay to see whether or not Mark Medina did in fact storm the court and screw up Steph's finger. I'm just going to put that out there.
Yeah, I will tell you this. Well, first of all, like, all their charges are incorrect and false. I'm innocent. But what was interesting, I chatted with Steph after Game 6 of the closeout series against the Rockets, and he said that this is something that he's going to feel pain for a while until basically he rests. Now, he got 2 days of rest this weekend, and we talked with him at practice, you know, on Monday, and he was saying it feels better, but he didn't really know what it meant because he wants to see how it is in an actual game where, you know, players are whacking at it. But he did not say that I was whacking at it. He was saying other guys on the court are. So I think if you would ask Steph Curry, he would also defend my character.
I love the idea that if we see the video from that, it's going to show you reaching out and trying to hit his hand multiple times, and it just keeps moving it out of the way,
wow,
you know, at the last second. So, but let me ask you, I was going to do a Steph question later on. Let's just do it now. As far as his health, we certainly know about the finger, and you just gave us a great update on it. Is there anything else that you think he's dealing with? I mean, outside of the normal, you know, aches and pains and nicks that any player would be dealing with at this time of the year, is there anything else going on?
Not that I know of. I mean, obviously he entered the first or the second round series with, you know, having a little bit of an ankle issue, but as far as I know, that's all healed. It's really just the finger, and he's been putting tape on it. He has a splint. They've been experimenting of to what extent should they relieve the pressure, to what extent should Steph try to test it out.
Toward
the end of Game 6, I think he got whacked on a few times, and he was literally putting the hand behind his back so he wouldn't have to dribble the ball anymore.
Yep.
That's it as far as I know. But when I talked with Bruce Frazier, the Warriors assistant coach, he was saying that it's affected him a lot. Like, he didn't want to break down or even know, like, these shooting slumps that he's had. Is it all directly related to finger or just the defense? Probably a combination of both. But he said it's definitely affected just his overall rhythm and timing of things.
Yeah, it makes sense. I'll say, just from a fan perspective and almost like watching a movie, towards the end of Game 6, when he did bang it, when he aggravated it, and we could see it, right? It keeps holding it. It keeps doing all the things you've alluded to. And then he'd go back out and have to dribble with that hand. Every time it happened, I was wincing. You know what I mean? And like, just, it was involuntary. Like, I could only imagine how much it hurt, and it just adds to the legend of Steph. But let's get other injury updates out of the way. KD, what are you hearing on him? Where is his calf? When can we expect him possibly back?
Yeah, so I think there was a lot being made of, I guess, just because the Rocket series is over, that maybe this means that Kevin Durant can come back at some point. But you remember when he injured his right calf at the end of Game 5, the day after, they said they were going to reevaluate him in a week, and that still stands. So he's going to be reevaluated Thursday.
Okay.
So that already pencils him out for Game 1 on Tuesday against Portland. It basically pencils him out for Game 2 as well, because the normal criteria is, like, what they're evaluating on Thursday isn't whether he can play. It's what can he do to start rehabbing.
Okay.
These guys, even if it's the playoffs, Steve Kerr's not going to just throw them into a game right after an injury. And that, I think, kind of also applies to DeMarcus Cousins. Like, I know, Mark Stein from the New York Times has mentioned that DeMarcus was eyeing a return at some point in the Western Conference Finals. And that's all well and good, but that's just DeMarcus eyeing the return. The Warriors training staff aren't eyeing that, because right now he's only been cleared for spot shooting and some conditioning. And when I watched practice today, I mean, it's not like he was showing anything for the worse, but he's pretty slow right now. Like, he's not doing a lot of things. So if I had to guess, he's not going to be in the Western Conference Finals. But they haven't
they're going to evaluate him next week to see if he can advance to his, you know, the next stages of rehab. But, you know, if he is going to wind up coming back in the postseason, I think it's going to be for the NBA Finals.
I'm really worried about Boogie's return whenever it is. And this is coming just from me. It's not something I've heard from the team, and certainly not Mark, nor is it Maxime. But if Boogie's focus was only to make sure that he helped this team do whatever the hell he needed to do to win a championship, then welcome him back, man, of course. But this injury, I think, puts that into question a little bit. Not that he's the kind of dude to be selfish, but I think it's just this personal nature, right? The human nature to want to come out and show the rest of the teams that he's still worthy of a contract, even though it's not enough time to be able to establish it. And that means taking a ton of shots and probably playing more minutes than the Warriors want. And it also means a change in the way they play, you know? So I'm not really excited for that to happen, and it sounds like, fortunately, it's a bridge we can jump off down the road when we actually come to it. But let me ask you this, Mark, because you are the perfect guy for it. So one of the kind of entertaining things that came out of the Game 6 win is the reunited conversation of how good are the Warriors without KD, right? And we all look back to 2015 and who was this team beforehand. And I think it is ludicrous to say that the team is better without Kevin Durant for obvious reasons. He's probably the best player on earth. But I am going to say, and this is my question to you, see whether or not you agree with me, I think this team is more entertaining without Kevin Durant. And let me oversimplify it with an analogy. If a sprinter hurt his leg, right, and couldn't run as fast, that sprinter isn't as good hurt as he is healthy. He's not a better runner. But if that sprinter with a hurt leg wins the race, you know, it's a much more entertaining storyline. I just love watching it. And we watched that play out in Game 6. Without KD, these guys are David, not Goliath. And there's just something that's more exciting about it. And that's before we even get to the actual style of basketball. But from what you have watched, and again, this is just entertainment, not better, but entertainment. Do you think they are more entertaining without KD?
You know, that's still a tough question for me to answer, and here's why. I think, no question, Game 6 against Houston was the most entertaining game of the season, but I think that that was one of those things that it's a flash in the pan.
Yeah.
Like, it almost reminded me when I was covering the Lakers, when Kobe Bryant would be out for an injury, and there'd be all this concern of, oh my gosh, like, what do they do? And everyone for the first one or two games just plays out of their mind. Like, the odds of sustaining that are really high. Like, they took basically the equivalent of a few cans of Red Bull and then just went out and played. But eventually that Red Bull dies down and then you kind of crash. So I think it helps that Portland's not as tough of a matchup against the Rockets. But the idea that the Warriors are going to replicate what they showed in Game 6, I think, frankly, is just asking for too much. I mean, for sure, Steph Curry and Klay Thompson, they should be getting their shots going. I mean, with exception of, like, Steph shouldn't be scoreless in the first half, but, like, 33 points, I think that's obviously something he can do on a game-to-game basis. Klay can do that, Draymond, Andre. But there's a lot of things that just kind of seemed like, can you really do that on a night-to-night basis? Like, I mean, even Andre playing really well, hit 5 threes in the game. Sean Livingston all of a sudden putting 11 points. Kevon Looney is good, but, like, having guys like Jordan Bell and Quinn Cook play substantial minutes without screwing up, like, it seemed like the stars really had to align perfectly for all that to happen. And I think the reason why it happened, it was the first game without Kevin. They knew if a game goes to Game 7, like, all bets are off, even with home court advantage. And the Rockets, frankly, were tired. Like, it's the same old story with James Harden and Chris Paul, you know, regressing as the playoffs continue to go. So I don't even want to say it's definite they're entertaining, just because I don't know how long you can carry that over knowing the makeup of this team right now.
I think you're right, which sucks because I was so proud of that sprinters analogy. Like, I worked on it and I wrote it out and stuff. And then the second you started talking, I think you're on the money. And I think the way we can distill it, the easiest question is this. Do you think a KD-less Warriors team could beat Houston in a 7-game series, not just in a Game 6? And I think what you're saying is no, right?
Well, not necessarily. I just don't think it's a foregone conclusion. Like, I think it would have gone 7 games. I think, you know, if there is a benefit of that, is that the Warriors wouldn't be as inclined to sometimes take off plays or heaven forbid even take off games. And I don't think they took off games against Houston, but there are definitely games where all of a sudden they're losing the rebound battle substantially and not closing out well on the perimeter, where with Kevin being out, like every player to a man felt like they have zero margin for error.
Sure.
And, you know, you would, as a Warriors fan, I'm sure you would wish, hey, why can't these guys do this all the time during the regular season, the playoffs? Like, there's so many games where you feel like, do they really give a you know what? But Steve Kerr really made a good point that even if all these guys maxed out their effort at some point, like, that probably wouldn't be a good thing because they just burn out by the time, like, the real games matter. So as far as, like, a hypothetical series against Houston, I think they could definitely still win, but it would just be hard to predict. Like, I think if you would simulate it, like, 100 times, like, in NBA 2K, you'd, like, get completely different results each time.
I've spent this time trying to come up with another sprinter analogy, and I came up with nothing. I'm just going to tell you that right now. Unfortunately, I was only good for one, and I think you're right. Let's move on to the Portland stuff, right? So we're all celebrating. I'll keep it personal. I'm celebrating as if the Warriors have already won the finals. We are so worried about the Houston series that now that it's behind us, Portland has already kind of become an asterisk, which is ridiculous because they are having their own unbelievable run, and Dame Lillard is watching his own ascension into, you know, the top ranks of basketball. So let me start by asking this. Why can Portland win this series? Not why they should be favored, but are there any reasons out there why we should be worried that they're good enough to beat us?
Yeah, with the caveat that I'm not, but if I want to go along with this, I think there's three things. The absence of Kevin Durant and to a lesser extent to Marcus Cousins catches up to the Warriors, where, you know, maybe the Steph and Klay aren't hitting so many shots and all, you know, the bench isn't suddenly being magnificent and mirroring strength and numbers, but a la 2015-2016. And then I think because it's the opponent and the Warriors feel like, you know, to some extent they had their toughest test in the playoffs against the Houston Rockets, they start going regular season mode.
Yep.
And then you have Damian Lillard just playing out of his mind, as well as CJ McCollum. And I think that would be a crazy story. Like, I was just talking to his high school coach, Damian Lillard from Oakland High, and he was saying, like, just think about this. Like, how crazy of a story would it be? Damian Lillard grew up in Oakland, and he's the one that shuts down Oracle, yep, like, in an elimination game. His last game is the last game in Oracle Arena ever. That being said, I just don't see that happening. Like, if I had to give my prediction, I think the Warriors win in five. I think Portland wins in game three because of all the usual elements of, you know, Warriors would be up 2-0. Maybe they let their guard down. Portland feels the urgency. They're at home. And Damian Lillard is always due for a really good game. But, frankly, I feel like the Warriors, because they got through that gauntlet with Houston, they're fully rested as opposed to Portland that just beat Denver in seven games. And at some point, Kevin Durant will come back. Maybe not right away, but I think in the middle of the series, it's just going to be too much.
Is there any animosity between these two teams? I mean, one of the things that made the Houston series so entertaining, right, is this background knowledge that these two teams do not like one another. And I specialize in disliking the other team. The only thing I dislike about Portland is CJ McCollum's Hitler mustache. Like, there's nothing, like, that I really can build up. So, I mean, for you, is there anything between these two? Like, I looked into their history. I found nothing. I found maybe the beef between Klay and... Go ahead.
Yeah, you need to do more research. The thing that you just talked, and you're about to talk about, the Zach Collins.
Yeah, Zach Collins.
Beef.
Okay, like, well, you can't give me crap about saying I didn't do the research if I was just about to bring that specific thing up. And,
okay, that's fair.
Show you even further research. Also, during last year's offseason, Kevin Durant went on Hitler Stash's podcast, I mean, CJ McCollum's podcast, and took some inadvertent shots, told them that Portland would never be up at the top and that CJ need not concern himself with what happens at the top. I think CJ was pissed off about the Boogie signing, but I mean, it was a playful podcast. It's not like they exchanged FU barbs.
Nah, you know how I felt, bro. I was hot. I don't know if I was more mad than when you went to Golden. I think I was more mad.
Why are you mad about this stuff?
Bro, I'm in the league. What do you mean? Why am I mad about this? I mean, like, I'm in the Western Conference. I got to play you MFers. all the time anyway, as it is, over and over again. We done got eliminated by y'all a few times in the first round. So I'm looking at Cuz.
I mean, you know you guys aren't going to win a championship.
Bro, we have the team. We have the capabilities. Anything is possible. So what do you suggest?
I suggest you just keep playing, man, and don't worry about what goes on at the top of things.
We right there at the top of things. We was a third seed last year, bro. We was right there. We was just slightly below 1-2.
But then, how'd you play?
Some unfortunate situations happened in the first round.
How'd you play?
Some unfortunate circumstances.
Like an 8 seed.
We did not play. So, is there animosity? Is the Zach Collins thing enough to fire up these teams?
Well, okay. So, I think the CJ McCollum stuff, like, if there was a thing, it was all buried because I don't think it was even so much their exchanges on the podcast. Like, that was very playful. But you may recall that once the podcast was published,
yeah,
there were some fans engaging with CJ on Twitter, and CJ started ripping Durant's move to Golden State and calling it weak. And then, you know, Kevin being the guy that he is on social media, right, he saw it. And that's what led to the comment of, like, really? Like, I just went on your effing podcast.
That's right.
But I think that they've cleared it. I never noticed any, like, weird on-court moments between the two. I know CJ McCollum was asked about it after, you know, at media availability today, and he kind of downplayed it. But I really think the Zach Collins thing could turn into something. Like, I don't know what the genesis is about it. Like, Clay hasn't talked about it, but that last regular season game, it seemed like Zach was, like, really targeting Clay and just, like, wanting to get under his skin. And I saw Clay react two ways. I think he reacted dismissively, like, I'm Clay Thompson, who are you? But unlike a lot of times when you see Clay being very stoic and kind of apathetic to things, like, he was chirping back.
Yeah.
And Zach must have been saying something to get Clay to react, because he usually doesn't react at all. And then you may recall, he was getting involved with a lot of guys. Like, he was trying to be physical, and then, like, Draymond Green fouled him, and the officials called it a flagrant, and that led to the Steve Kerr incident with spiking the clipboard and getting ejected. So I do remember that after that game in Portland, I'm not going to name names because it was, you know, it wasn't like an interview setting, but there were a lot of players that were just kind of like, who is this Zach Collins guy? Like, yeah, what the hell is this deal? So I could see that carrying over to the postseason. It could be fun. You might see Clay and Zach rolling on the floor at some point.
I also haven't heard what Zach Collins said, but his Hitler Youth haircut is enough to make me hate that dude. So now you got two players supporting.
There's a real hair theme that is emerging over in Portland. It's a Third Reich theme that we probably don't have to go deep down into. Do you anticipate, let me ask you, Maxime, do you think there'll be a fight between the teams?
I could see one happening. I could see Zach Collins getting up in Clay's grill. I could see Clay shaking it off, but then I could see Draymond getting involved. I could see it getting out of hand.
What you don't know, Mark, is that when that altercation happened, Maxime took real great offense to it and spent, I don't know, what felt like 2 hours screaming into the microphone about how much he hated Zach Collins. So that fight may be started by Mr. Stinnett. If you guys see someone in a Warriors huddle gear rush the floor, you've finally seen Maxime. It just is what it is.
Yeah, I think that was we had to release that podcast in three parts because it broke the servers.
It was a long one. Mark, the Warriors, I looked this up, are unbelievable favorites in the series. They're -500 for the series price. So what that means is if I wanted to win 100, I'd have to bet 500 to win it. So let me ask you, do you think that is justified? And if so, why?
Boy, explain these odds again.
It's basically they're 5-1 favorites is the simplest version.
Yeah. I think it's completely justified. I don't think that outside of Damian Lillard and CJ McCollum, like, there's really anyone that matches up well with the Warriors. And I think when you're looking at that backcourt, like, one or two of them can get off, but, you know, the Warriors can kind of offset that because they have these two guys named Steph Curry and Klay Thompson that can really shoot the ball well. And I feel like Klay can limit one of those guys. And the Warriors have shown, specifically this season with CJ McCollum, that she's kind of a non-factor against them. Yep. So, again, like, the reason why I think it's going to be short is, like, the Warriors are so good, and Damian can always have a 40-point night, and he'll be due for one of those, maybe in game 3 or, you know, whenever. But it's just not really enough. Like, it'll still be fun because all those, like, Damian's a really good scorer and the Warriors are always entertaining. So I don't want to say, like, it's going to be boring basketball. It'll still be exciting, but I feel like the outcome's already predetermined.
You know what I feel like the biggest concern is with the 5-1 odds? The 5-1 odds.
Why would it be?
I feel like knowing that they are that strong of contenders might make them take their foot off the gas.
Game one has let down written all over. I think the Warriors win it in probably six, maybe five. I think probably six. I also, and here's my random prediction for the series, I think they lose either games one or two. Mm-hmm. I think they're going to lose one in Oakland. I think Damon's going to come out hot as hell. And then I think we probably sweep them in Portland. I still think we win the series. But, you know, it's just classic letdown game. But the, you know, everything that you said, Mark, is on the money. All the objective factors to this, all the talent evaluations land back on our side. So there's no reason why it should last longer than five. But, you know, we never know. You never know. What's your prediction, Maxine?
Yeah, I mean, I also want to take them in five. I don't think they're going to drop one at Oracle. I just don't think they have that in them. I think one more thing that's really important in all of this is that Rodney Hood injury. He's been an absolute key piece for them in this post-series run. You know, it sounds like it's just it's not a serious problem, and he's day-to-day now. But, like, dude was pretty much crying on the floor when he went down. That looked like a pretty brutal injury, and I feel like he's not going to be able to come back 100%. So, like I said, I think Warriors in five. I would see us dropping game three in Portland, but that's about it.
Mark, I skipped my favorite section, and I'm just realizing that now, and we really need your help with it. It's the off-the-court report. And so I definitely, if you got a story from Houston, I will eat it up, and we need it. But I also want your clarity, because one of my favorite stories from the year is slowly being taken away from me, and I'm hoping that you can give it back. And it's the idea that right before game six, Chris Paul kicked Steph Curry off the practice court, right? So there's this story out there, if you haven't heard it, I know you have, Mark, but that Steph wanted to get some shots up in Houston the night before game six. They have some kind of scheduling snafu at the arena so that Chris Paul showed up at the same time. Steph offers to share the court. Chris Paul says no. Steph gets kicked out of the arena, and then after the game, Steph is videoed screaming something along the lines of, kick me off the court again. But I've now heard that might not be true. So do you have anything on that for us, man? What's going on with that story?
No, I'll be honest. Like, I mean, I know Marcus Thompson reported that, and I trust what he writes, but I know him covering the Warriors, that was more kind of from their perspective, but ever since it was published, like, the Rockets have vehemently disputed that. But with that being said, like, there might be some details that, you know, they didn't fully understand and some things lost in translation.
Yeah.
But I also feel like this example kind of reeks of how Houston reacted to the officiating and just how Chris Paul is on the court.
That's right.
Like, yep. I tend to believe the Warriors version a lot more than the Rockets version, even if maybe the Warriors had some misunderstandings about certain details or direct intentions. The thing that really bothered me, and like, I can't be any more clear on this, because there are some Rockets fans that are really getting at me, and that dumb announcer who's such a homer, who's a joke, that was saying how, you know, we have this, like, vested interest and we're so elite about, whatever.
Yeah.
Like, I don't care who wins. I'm just talking about from a basketball observer. It was obnoxious seeing Chris Paul play, where he was flopping all the time. And I know this is part of his game, but it seemed like it took a turn for the worse this season. Like, I saw him a lot down when I was in L.A. Like, I didn't cover the Clippers on a day-to-day basis, but during the playoffs, I would help out. And, you know, he was always one of the best point guards in the NBA. And, like, even if he did those tactics, like, he brought a lot more to the table than just that. You know, I remember seeing him hit a game winner against San Antonio in the first round of the playoffs, game seven in 2015, when he had a hamstring injury. So, like, he is a good player, but it seemed like that's the only tricks he had in the book this series. And it was very annoying to watch. Like, every single time he was, like, within a few inches of step, he would just be flailing. It was just obnoxious to see. And I think, to a lesser extent, James Harden did that as well. Like, now, to James's credit, he was productive, and whether you like the style or not, like, you got results. But I think on top of that, like, the reason why I have a problem with James Harden's game isn't, like, I get you have to play the numbers, you have to play by, you know, if you can exploit how the game is called, like, that means you're a smart player. But I feel like Lou Williams does it a lot different than how James Harden did, where, like, Lou, he's just a very good tactician, and he's crafty, where James Harden would do things that felt like he was playing a video game and he just had all the cheat codes.
Right.
And the thing that people always talk about that defend James Harden when they, you know, people are saying, oh, well, you know, he's much more than just a free throw shooter, and he doesn't just flop, he has such an amazing game. Yes, he does have an amazing game, and that's why I have a problem with him using all those tactics.
That's exactly, like, right.
He is better than that, and he shouldn't have to rely on those tactics to be such a good player. And yeah, it was a weird series for me to watch, because, like, unlike you, I don't have a skin in the game. Like, I'm not wearing a Warriors jersey. I'm not looking through things, you know, through their glasses. I'm just looking at it from a basketball standpoint, and, like, watching the Rockets were terrible to watch. It was ridiculous.
I love that take so much, Mark. You can't see it, but I'm giving you finger guns through this microphone.
Nice.
Right now. And I also, like,
well,
of course,
well,
you're right.
By the way, I mean, if I want to make some plugs here while I'm at it, like, I got the Warriors HQ podcast, and my colleague and friend here, Kurt Bach, and I, like, we were going in and deep on how ridiculous the Rockets were to watch, just as, like, a basketball observer. So you like that take? It was just like a fraction of what we're discussing on the pod day to day.
Well, we're going to hear about all the places we can find you. Let me just put a bow on your Harden analogy, because I agree with you. Watching somebody of his talent look for fouls is like watching a top-line artist sell paint-by-number photos. You know, like, he didn't have to do it. Why? What the hell are you doing that for? You have talent. Why go in that direction? But I am burying the farm. Well, it was disgusting.
Can I give you another?
Of course.
I want to give you another analogy about James Harden. I've also made this because it kind of applies to our line of work. I always equated how James Harden does things to, you know, a sports writer who just chases clicks and tries to get, you know, traffic by cheap headlines as opposed to doing really good work. And the problem with that is there's, you know, I'm not thinking of anyone in particular, but maybe there's a writer out there who actually is really good at getting good stories and has a good interview style, asking questions, but then he does, like, the clickbaity stuff. And that's why, you know, to tie to James, it's almost like you're better than that. You shouldn't have to be that guy that does all these cheap little things to pad your stats and all that. So, yeah, it was just infuriating to watch. And just, again, from a basketball standpoint, it was fun to see the tension and the back and forth and the competitive moments with the Warriors and Rockets. But as far as the style play that the Rockets had, I'm just glad I didn't have to watch them for all 82.
Mark, that's such a good point about the clickbaity nature of it. It seems like it's a race to the bottom, and I just want to say that really, basketball fans everywhere should be celebrating that the Warriors beat the Rockets, because the Warriors play a brand of basketball that everybody should be rooting for. That's fine if you don't like the Warriors and you think they're villains, whatever, but they are playing pure artistry basketball, and Harden is playing, I mean, the Rockets are literally playing basketball by the numbers.
Oh, and you got a figure. Adam Silver must have had a huge sigh of relief. Huge.
Well, and here's the ironic part. Like, in Houston's defense, what I do admire about them is that they were one of the teams that, instead of bemoaning the CBA and how things are so unfair that the Warriors are so talented, like, they went and made moves. Like, they wanted to compete against the Warriors. And I think defensively, they did a lot of good things in terms of scheming and knowing the switch-heavy tactics that could try to disrupt the Warriors. And I know, talking to people on the team, like Kevin Durant was telling me at the beginning of this season, like, when he was reflecting on the Western Conference Finals, he was saying, like, that is the first time I really felt tested defensively. Yeah. So it's just so ironic that they're doing the right things in terms of, hey, if you want to beat the Warriors, you got to construct a roster that gives yourself a chance to do that. They did a lot of good things defensively, even when they lost Trevor Reeves and Luke Bamute. But offensively, just that whole system is just aggravating to watch. And it's a shame because Mike D'Antoni, I know him from the Lakers days, and I can just imagine, like, if he were to go back in time when he was with the Phoenix Suns and see how the Houston Rockets were playing that, like, he would hate it. Like, it goes against his core beliefs of ball movement and, you know, getting everyone involved and the ball finds energy. And, you know, D'Antoni has defended it saying, well, you know, I'm adjusting my system, my personnel, and James Harden's one of the best ISO players ever. And I get that to an extent, but why does it have to come with all the cheap tricks?
Hell yes.
Along with that?
Well, there is a name for Mike D'Antoni's offense in Phoenix. 7 seconds or less. They shot it immediately.
Yeah.
It's the exact opposite now. It's all ISO ball dribbled through the legs of Harden for as long as he can until the final 10 seconds, and then he draws a foul. So, yeah, I love the idea of Mike B being disgusted by the very offense he is currently captaining. Mark, it's not just your podcast people out there want more of. You are amazing every time you come on this show. Let's give them all the arenas they can get Medina in their life, man. Where can they find you?
Okay, well, so the Warriors HQ podcast is basically on every platform, iTunes, Google Play, Spotify, Stitcher. We got a really good deal going on at the Mercury News and the East Bay Times. We have a paywall now, but if you subscribe, it's only 11 cents a day for 11 months. And if you subscribe, you get a free commemorative Warriors Championship coffee table book from last year. And, you know, the way things are going, like, I'm sure another one will be in the work and there'll be a new deal on that. But, yeah, 11 cents a day for 11 months plus a free Warriors coffee table book.
Other services, man? I know there's other ways we can get your stuff.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And also Twitter, MarkG_Medina. So, yeah, I think those are the three things you got to go to at mercurynews.com and eastbaytimes.com.
After you've supported Mark, you can hit us up. You want to tell us you hate our podcast, love our podcast, whatever the hell it is, we can be hit at warriorshuddle@gmail.com and also at warriorshuddle is our Twitter account. In fact, next week we're going to get back to the You've Got Hate Mail segment. A couple of people out there really disliked a couple of my takes. So we will jump into those next week. But with that in mind, go Warriors, and hopefully we'll see you real soon.
Good, good.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Save big on your Memorial Day barbecue, all in the Kroger app. Get 3-pound rolls of juicy 80% lean ground beef for $3.49 a pound with a digital coupon. Then get select varieties of flavorful Powerade, Body Armor Super Drink, or Arizona Tea for 77 cents each, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.